It's not quite a plant. You can eat it, although it might kill you. And some might even make you feel like the walls are melting. Yes, this week's Please Explain is all about mushrooms. And joining us to talk all things mushroom is the education chair of the New York Mycological Society, Gary Linkoff. He's also the author of several books on fungi, including the Audubon Society Field Guide to North American Mushrooms. We're also joined by Chef John Chasteen of the Sea Grill at Rockefeller Center, whose restaurant is taking part in the Mushroom Festival next month. And I'm very pleased to welcome both of you. As always, we invite calls from our listeners at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Well, most of us are familiar with the part of the mushroom that you might buy in the store, but that's not the whole thing, is it, Gary?
No, that's just the fruiting body. It's the fungus is underground or in woods, in the tree, or if they're growing them, it's in the compost. But you're buying the fruiting body, which is sort of like buying cherries.
And then does the rest then flower again the next time mushrooms pop up?
Well, then in our area, like it's raining, within a day or two, we would go out looking for a new crop. And some of those would be on trees or in the ground, coming up in, say, Central Park or any of the places that that you can find soil and you can find trees.
Well, two of the terms that popped up when I was looking into mushrooms are mycelium and hyphae.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
Well, they're two words that really stand for the same thing, and those are the microscopic filaments that are the vegetative state of the fungus. They are the thing that if you pulled up mushrooms and you looked at it, you would see sort of white cottony things at the base of the stem. Or if you pull bark away and you look at inside, you might see something that looks like a cottony mass, and that's a mycelium.
Well, does that make fungi, a mushroom a fungi, right? Mm-hmm. Any different from plants? It sounds like that these are their roots.
Well, yes, except that mushrooms are spore bearing. And they have a different cell structure. They have a different growth pattern. And actually, fungi are microscopic organisms. We benefit from them because some of these fungi produce these macroscopic things that we call mushrooms. And those are the things that we go out, we hunt for, you find in the markets, you find in the restaurants. Some of the best edibles that we eat now are mushrooms. And, of course, some of the mushrooms are poisonous. So one of the things we do with the New York Mycological Society is teach people how do you tell the edible from the poisonous lookalikes.
Which is something I'm sure you're concerned about, John. Or do you just buy them from suppliers and assume that they're always going to be okay?
I think you have to always do a little bit of assumption, I'm sorry to say. But we do try to – we have a great relationship with a lot of our purveyors. And we recognize, at least in the restaurants throughout the city, a lot of the mushrooms are used. You recognize a chanterelle or a truffle or a matsutake or a maitake mushroom, the shiitake mushrooms you see in the grocery stores. I think it's just a matter of recognizing. And if you don't recognize a mushroom, then it's something that you'd want to investigate a little bit more.
But since most mushrooms are poisonous, aren't they?
Oh, no. No, most mushrooms are just not edible.
Ah. Would there be others that would look like chanterelles that I might think are chanterelles but are not chanterelles?
Yes. The most common cause of mushroom poisoning in the Northeast is a mushroom called the jack-o'-lantern, which looks like a chanterelle to the uninitiated. And when they find it, they think they have found chanterelles. And then more seriously, there was a poisoning in Scotland early in September. The man who wrote The Horse Whisperer thought, I think, that he was finding chanterelles, and he found a poisonous quaternarius. And that's a serious poisoning because it caused a kidney failure. So
is he okay now?
He's on the mend.
The horses were missing him.
Yeah, exactly. Fortunately, we don't have that mushroom here in the Northeast at the moment, but mushrooms do move. But anyway, chanterelles are a clear favorite among everybody who knows mushrooms.
Do we have any idea why mushrooms, some mushrooms are poisonous, others are just inedible, and some are among our favorite, whatever we call them, spore-bearing
right. Well,
things to eat?
Sure. You know, just like with plants, mushrooms are producing compounds. In some cases, they are to protect themselves against predators. And so they produce a number of compounds that are toxic. In some cases, they're just metabolic byproducts of the growth pattern of certain mushrooms. And unfortunately for us, there are just a few really poisonous mushrooms, just enough to stop people from just saying, oh, you just go pick it. We have a little more effort now to make sure that you don't have the most poisonous mushroom when you're out there collecting.
Are they all poisonous in the same way, or are there different poisons in different mushrooms?
There are different poisons in different mushrooms, but there are only a half a dozen different kinds of major kinds of poisoning, and only one or two are things that you would really worry about.
Now, my guests on Please Explain today are Gary Linkoff, who's chair of the New York Mycological Society and author of the Audubon Society Field Guide to North American Mushrooms, and Chef John Chasteen of the Sea Grill at Rockefeller Center. His restaurant is taking part in the Mushroom Festival next month. Next month because this is mushroom season?
I think it's a great season. It's the fall harvest that we have going on, and mushrooms are just part of that harvest. And we have a lot of beautiful mushrooms that will be coming up locally in the north, northeast here, as well as from the northwest. Oregon is a fantastic producer of mushrooms in California. But I think it's just part of the fall season. You have those rich kind of earth tone colors going on, and it's something that we love the flavors and the different varieties that add to the fish as well as to the assorted vegetables that we're already serving.
Well, rain is forecast for all weekend, so I'm assuming we're going to see mushrooms popping up in this area around Monday or Tuesday.
Well, there'll be a lot of people out on Sunday morning combing the woods, the parks. I'll be in Central Park. People will be in other parks here in the city, and they'll be in places in all around New York, southern New York, certainly western New Jersey, eastern New Jersey, and Connecticut.
Well, if I'm walking down a street and I spot something on a lawn or I'm in one of the parks, is it likely that I'm going to be spotting an edible mushroom?
There's no way of knowing ahead of time. I'm constantly asked by people, you know, I just saw something. Is it edible? I even had someone come over and say that there are mushrooms growing right in front of Zabar's. Come quickly. And I assumed that they were joking, but sure enough, there were a dozen mushrooms in the grassy strip between the traffic lanes right in front of Zabar's. And unfortunately, it was a poisonous mushroom. But, you know, he didn't know that. I had to assure him that, in fact, you know, he had found a very special mushroom in the city, but it wasn't one he could eat.
Well, how would you know that it was poisonous? Do you have to put it under a microscope, or are they easy to spot?
There are some pretty easy ways to recognize poisonous mushrooms. And I wrote a book on poisonous mushrooms. So I had to actually investigate to find out what are all those poisonous mushrooms, what do they look like, what's in them, where do they grow, what's their distribution, and how do you explain this to beginners, to people who would just like to go out and feel safe about picking something that's edible. And that's sort of what I do.
Well, since they come from the spread of spores, how would they wind up in front of Zabar's?
Oh, because a lot of mulch is moved around, and the spores are in the mulch that is placed just about everywhere. People use mulch to keep weeds from growing, and so a lot of plantings are mulched. And if you watch after a rain, that's a great place to look for mushrooms.
In mulch?
In mulch.
Because they also feed off of waste material, don't they?
Well, they are a kind of a wood chip debris. And so the fungi—
It's like eating wood chips?
The fungi are eating the wood chips.
Uh-huh. In the end, that's what gives them that special meaty flavor, don't you think, John?
I think, yeah, you have different nuances in the mushrooms, but all of them have this kind of earthy, musty flavor, or even just a smell to them that that you're picking up. There's some, like a shiitake, is a little bit more stronger in that wood or oak flavor. A morel is a little bit sweeter. You don't really get a whole lot of wood off of it, but you do get some ground effect.
And some people will compare portobellos to steak, to meat.
Right. It's not a really strong flavor. It's more of a kind of a texture that they've got in there. And especially if you put a portobello on a grill, or the size that you, because they are such large mushrooms, the size that you cut them, you can get a mouthful, and it's a nice chew, like a nice rare piece of beef.
Well, the most common mushroom in a local supermarket is that white thing. I'm assuming they're farmed.
Yes.
Cremini's, right. Or portobellos.
Would they grow mushrooms in the wild?
There are occasionally you find a wild form of that mushroom. But mostly what we find are closely related mushrooms. One of them is called the meadow mushroom, which comes up in on park lawns, in grassy areas. And occasionally, if you're looking where there are lawns, you'll see rings, dark rings in the grass, like dark green rings. And those are, we call those fairy rings. And during the right season, those are replaced by rings of mushrooms. And some of those mushrooms are agaricus, which is closely related to the white button mushroom that you see in the store.
But the white buttons are actually grown in
those are grown in caves, right.
And do they need to be in controlled environments to avoid being contaminated by toxic spores?
They are grown under great control, but mostly for efficiency, so that they can get the crops produced when they want, and also so they can control contamination. Sure.
John, do you know if mushrooms have any nutritional value?
You know, I was speaking to Gary about that, and we were trying to he was pointing out to me that the more that you eat, the more kind of amino acids and different proteins that are involved and nutrients in mushroom can only be absorbed by your body. And it's not necessarily a negative effect that people experience by consuming mushrooms. So I would have to assume that it would be a positive effect. You would gain something. For me, it's mostly a nice texture and a flavor that you're getting with whatever you're eating with it. It's
and
a nice
some of
contrast,
them.
And it's a wonderful natural product.
And some of them are incredibly expensive. Like,
yes, definitely.
Like truffles.
Well, I think it has to do with the rarity of finding it and the cultural aspect of what you had as a child or what your family had brought you up with, and you want to experience that again, the smell of something, the taste of something. And the more people that are in tune with these, the higher the demand. And so I think that's what really drives the price of these mushrooms.
As a chef, I'm assuming that you have looked into the use of mushrooms in many different cuisines. Is this something that are mushrooms used in all of the different cuisines around the world?
I think so. I think there is no real cultural barrier to the mushroom. And all the different restaurants that I visited in the city and different ingredients that we use, it seems like they really go wonderfully cross-culturally. I find them very interesting with Asian ingredients, the soy sauce or miso, with the earth tones and some sweetness going on. They really lend themselves nicely to this particular cuisine.
Are there some climates that they don't thrive in, Gary?
Well, they can be found. Mushrooms can be found everywhere, but say Antarctica.
But most of the places where we get prized mushrooms are in more temperate zones, aren't they?
Temperate zones, right? And if you look at the different cuisines and how they're using mushrooms, you find they're almost always mixing mushrooms and grains. And if you look and try to figure out why they're doing that, because this is not new, this is something that goes back generations and millennia, you find that grains are very low in tyrosine, one of the essential amino acids. Mushrooms are very rich in tyrosine. And if you put the two together in the same meal, like rice and beans, you have mushrooms and rice, you have mushrooms and wheat or pasta, you have mushrooms and corn or polenta, you have a much better meal, and you can find that people around the world who use mushrooms are aware of this. And this is how they eat mushrooms, as opposed to pigging out and eating a large quantity of mushrooms simply alone.
We have to go to a break, but before we go, I'm going to put Carol on the line because Carol's calling from Westport, and I don't want to run up her phone bill any more than I have to. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Well, I've been driving around in Connecticut in the rain today, and on the side of the road I see these, I think they're puffball mushrooms. They're about the size almost of a grapefruit, and they're really easy to spot. They look so different from other mushrooms, and I've been tempted to, you know, pull one up and take it home and cook it, but I've never had the nerve. And I was just wondering if they are, in fact, okay to eat, because I've heard they are, and how you'd recommend cooking them.
Okay, it's really simple. If it's the size of a grapefruit, take a knife, cut it open. It should be pure white inside. No other colors that you can see. No black, no green, no yellow, just pure white. And there's nothing else out there but an old softball that you could mistake it with. So you have a puffball. Now you want to cook
it. Wait, if those colors are present, then likely to be poisonous?
Then either if it's the size of a softball, it's just going to be old rather than poisonous.
Have you ever cooked up puffballs?
I've never cooked up puffballs. I can't honestly say. I find generally, though, just mushrooms simply with a little bit of butter sauteed in salt and pepper is always very nice.
Can I jump in here? If you dredge the slice of puffball, if you dredge it in a batter with some panko breadcrumbs and saute it until it's golden brown on the outside, you'll find that it is a choice edible mushroom.
Nice. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'll make maple that for syrup. Dinner tonight.
Well, I hope that there's no color inside. Thank you so much for calling us, Carol.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to sneak another call in here as soon as my – well, I can't actually – oh, I finally got my – you know, this is a weird thing that just happened with my mouse. It just started wiggling things around. Let's go to Maria from Long Island. Hi, Maria. You're on the air.
Hi. Good afternoon. On the subject of shiitake mushrooms, I couldn't help but notice that I think it's Aveeno, the people who make skincare products, have been advertising some kind of, I think it's a moisturizer or something, and it says with shiitake complex in it. And I found that a little surprising. I was just wondering if either of your guests can talk about that, or are there some kind of properties that shiitake mushrooms have that are supposed to be good for your skin? Thanks.
Right. Yes, shiitake mushrooms have surfaced in the cosmetic trade, and so you'll find a couple of products, and Aveeno is one of them, that uses shiitake mushroom materials that is supposed to keep your skin from getting wrinkled and supposed to essentially improve the healthy glow of your skin. And you'll see that these Dr. Andrew Weil has researched this and has been promoting the use of these mushrooms in skincare products. You could find that online.
We thank you so much for your call. We're going to take a little break, and then we'll come back with Gary Linkoff, who's education chair of the New York Mycological Society, also the author of several books on fungi, including the Audubon Society Field Guide to North American Mushrooms. Also with us is Chef John Chasteen, who is wearing it's interesting looking at their shirts. John is wearing a shirt that is from a team in Germany, from Munich, and Gary is wearing a shirt that's got a lot of mushrooms on it. I don't know if they're edible or not. But John is at the Sea Grill at Rockefeller Center, a restaurant that is taking part in the Mushroom Festival next month. Continue calling us at 212-433-9692. You can also write in to our show page at WNYC.org with comments. We'll be right back. And we're back with our guests, John Chasteen of the Sea Grill and Gary Linkoff of the New York Mycological Society, and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Peter is calling in from the road somewhere. Hi, Peter.
Hello. How are you, Lenny? Love your show, and I have a question for your guests. Is there a qualitative difference between wild and those ubiquitous store-bought mushrooms that we get, akin to the difference between Pacific wild salmon and the rather bland farm salmon that you see in all the restaurants?
I think There's a huge difference. A lot of the mushrooms that we're using in the restaurant aren't necessarily farmed. You can only get them wild. The morels, for instance, the matsutake mushrooms. A lot of these mushrooms have to be foraged, and that's the you're going to get these particular flavors. Each one has a nuance of a flavor in it or a texture, a different mouthfeel after you cook it to specifically add to the dish. And I think a lot of there's a good quality of farm-raised mushrooms out there, and there's something for your palate to use in the different dishes you'd want to use. But it's always nice to find something that's rare or something that's wild so that you can pull that extra flavor from nature.
How many varieties are you likely to use during the Mushroom Festival next month?
We will definitely use four varieties, but I'm constantly bringing in small amounts of wild mushrooms here or there.
People come
really
in and say, John,
based
look
on
at
the
what
availability.
I found.
No, not necessarily. I'll get a call from my purveyor that says, you know, we've got a fantastic matsutake, or we got some chanterelles from Nova Scotia, and the Burgundy truffles or the white truffles will be coming into season. And it's really based on availability. We try to utilize some farm-raised product, but also leave room for wild products too.
Well, in the case of truffles, you can really taste the difference from the different places they come from. But what about other kinds of mushrooms? Are morels from the Pacific Northwest different than morels from France or from Canada?
I think so. I think it has to do with the shipping of the mushroom,
too.
Does it
have to do with the soil?
How fresh. I don't necessarily get so much. Yeah. It's more like if you're getting a morel from the Ukraine or Turkey, it's a little bit drier by the time you get it. Whereas if you were to get one locally or even from Oregon, it's a much more moist product and it just tastes better.
Although there are cuisines that use dried mushrooms and some where you reconstitute them by putting them in water.
Certainly. And I think it depends on how you're going to use that mushroom. If you're going to use it for a sauce, you would steep it and use that tea to make the flavor, to get the flavor into your sauce. The fresh mushroom is fantastic for the texture. It's all about the texture for the fresh mushroom. You wouldn't necessarily want to use a dried mushroom to show off any beautiful texture. It's just not going to be there.
Brian from Freehold, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. How are you?
I'm okay. What about you?
I am a huge mushroom lover. I love truffles. But I'm asking a question about something completely different. What causes certain types of mushrooms to be intoxicating as opposed to poisonous that, you know, are associated with certain types of, I don't know, Alice in Wonderland kind of stories and bands and things like that?
Yeah, there are two different groups of mushrooms that can cause intoxication, and one of them is the one that you see in the Alice in Wonderland stories illustrated. It's the most photogenic mushroom in the world. It's a red-capped mushroom with white spots on it, and shamans in Siberia use that mushroom for spiritual purposes and can actually transcend their body and so on, and we've been there a couple of times and experienced that. And it's a compound that's in the mushroom that is a normal product of the metabolism of the mushroom. The other is the group that's called the magic mushrooms, which are famous from Mexico, and they are very common in parts of North America. There's a series of different kinds of mushrooms that are often found in wood chip, in mulch.
But we have no idea of why they have those hallucinogenic qualities?
We know what the compounds are, and we've isolated them. And I think possibly more important than knowing why they're there, it's that right now the most exciting thing that has happened in 40 years with mushrooms, that magic mushrooms, which have always been illegal in this country for at least the past 30 years, is that they're now doing research at Johns Hopkins where they are using this mushroom, the magic mushrooms, to as in a therapy to treat people with cluster headaches, with alcoholism, with a variety of different dysfunctional disorders, and applying these mushrooms and finding that the people's behavior and their attitude toward life has changed under the influence of these mushrooms, under the direction of people like Roland Griffiths.
Well, obviously, they're not giving them huge quantities, so they're not getting stoned.
It's a controlled... Well, they are stoned. They are having a mystical experience, but under controlled conditions.
Brian, thank you so much for your call. Sharon has written into our website, and she wants to know what's the best way to clean mushrooms before cooking. She's heard that you just brush off the dirt, but that isn't enough for her. She's also heard that water on the mushrooms is bad for them. John?
Well, we have a special toothbrush that we use for different varieties of mushrooms. Different mushrooms require, I would say, different degrees of cleaning. The matsutakes or the truffles, for instance, they're a little bit tougher. Even the porcinis, they need a little bit of a toothbrush to them. And on the stems, especially for a porcini or a matsutake, we trim away the outside of the stem. It's a little bit more tough. It's a little barky there.
But you wouldn't use water because water will waterlog
them. I do use water. I'll take a damp towel and we'll wipe off the mushroom with a damp towel. We try not to submerge the mushrooms as much as possible. But, you know, the most important part, too, is to get it clean. You really don't want to have a sandy mushroom or a dirty mushroom in whatever you cook. You're enjoying it, and then all of a sudden you get a piece of grit in your teeth. So I think the most important part is that you want to clean the mushroom thoroughly, and a little bit of water is, you know, not going to hurt too much.
Another listener wants to know, Gary, why we don't have truffles in the United States. Couldn't we just take some of those spores from Northern Italy or France and strew them in the right air, the right kind of soil?
Right. This is actually being done now, and there are truffle farms now in the Carolinas where they are producing small amounts of European truffles. But in terms of the United States, we have at least seven different kinds of truffles right in the New York metropolitan area. Hard to find, but they're here. There are over 150 different kinds of truffles up in the Northwest.
Mexicans eat a thing called huitlacoche, which is a fungus that grows on corn.
Right.
Would you call that a mushroom as well?
They call it
the Mexican truffle.
Right. Corn smut is something.
That's what American farmers call it, corn smut.
It's a smut.
Mexicans say, oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a smut.
Gold. Isn't that nice?
But when we go into the markets, when we pull corn back to buy it, you notice that some people throw the corn back in the bins. Well, I pick up those ears and look because sometimes they have this grayish stuff growing on them. That's the smut. It's worth much more than the corn.
And do you cook with huitlacoche?
No, we don't cook with huitlacoche at the Sea Grill.
Molly from Princeton. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My family has a garden, and during the summer we have these really, really big mushrooms that grow. They can get to be like about 50 pounds. We're just wondering, is it?
I can't help it.
Are you sure they're not watermelons?
No, I'm sure. They're white. They grow in the shade. My sister's boyfriend looked them up once, and he said that they were edible, but they're massive.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool.
I don't know a 50-pound mushroom. You'd have to give me a little more information than that.
They grow around plants. Like, they grow – we have a rose bush, and it'll grow around the rose bush.
Here's what I think should happen. I think that you should invite – we'll take your number, and you should invite Gary – some of his people to come by and look at these mushrooms they're in bloom next. Because it sounds like something we may very well have made a major discovery here.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
A number of listeners have asked whether there is a major difference between American mushrooms and European mushrooms.
I put together a field guide to North American mushrooms, and I found that, not surprisingly, because I expected this, wherever I've taken people or we've traveled to Europe, to Africa, to different parts of Asia, we've been able to use that field guide to identify mushrooms in those different parts of the world. And it's if you go to those other places and you buy their mushroom field guides, you find that there's a huge overlap. While we don't have everything they have in Europe or in Asia, and they have things certainly that we can't have here, there's such an overlap that you can use a field guide in one country to use in another.
Do we have any idea how many varieties of mushrooms there are in the world?
Well, in terms of mushrooms being things that you would put into a basket large enough that you might consider eating, there are maybe 5,000.
We talked about freshness. How? What is the life cycle of a mushroom? I've heard that a portobello can double its size in 24 hours.
Right. Some of these things come up overnight and literally disintegrate before noon that day.
Oh, boy.
And
that'd
so
be a major
the life
loss.
Cycle, we're talking a couple hours. And some things take a week or two to really develop completely. And those giant puffballs that are the size of small meteors, they take several days to develop.
We have very little time, but Sharon, in your car, you want to ask your question?
Thank you so much. I've heard people refer to medicinal mushrooms, and I was wondering if that's something different from what you spoke about with the shamanic uses for alcoholism.
Yes, there's a whole large number of medicinal mushrooms that are now under current investigation, and many of those are the mushrooms that we have right here in your backyard, along the streets that you're driving, in the local parks, wherever you are. There are things called turkey tail mushrooms, for example. It's a huge business in Asia where they have found that these mushrooms are very useful in treating a variety of different tumors.
And Asia really does employ a lot of mushrooms in different ways than we do. We just simply eat them, and I'm looking forward to eating a few of them at the Sea Grill in the upcoming Mushroom Festival. My great thanks to the two of you, Gary Linkoff, who is Education Chair of the New York Mycological Society and also the author of the Audubon Society Field Guide to North American Mushrooms, and Chef John Chasteen of the Sea Grill at Rockefeller Center. When is the rush? Well, we'll talk about the Mushroom Festival later.